Actually, like, it was not my decision. It was actually, I was working at a restaurant when I moved to New York City. And then I didn't get fired, but the restaurant closed down. So I got a call, they're saying, you don't have to come in because we're going to close down. I said, when? They said, like, tomorrow. I was like, oh, no. So after that, it was just like, you know, I had a year or two of like really struggling, trying to make ends meet.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
Namaste and welcome to the 8th episode of Hamro Yatra. Today we have with us singer, songwriter, guitarist and music producer Diwas Gurung. Dubbed as the pioneer of the neo-Nepali folk sound, Diwas Gurung has certainly developed a niche genre that sets him apart in the Nepali music scene. Currently living in New York, Diwas Gurung started his musical journey from his school days, which led to a brief stint with Albatross way back when, and as they say, rest is history. In this episode, we go over the challenges of turning his passion of music into career and how he still stays inspired. Even with over two decades of experience, Diwas Thai is still keen on learning and growing as an artist. He takes opportunities as they come, isn't afraid to fail, and holds a pragmatic view of life and success. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling generous. Hello, Diwas Thai. Thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to Hamro Yatra.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So I normally like to start the conversation by asking some random questions. Mm-hmm. The first one being, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
I would love to. I've always thought about, like, it always has to do with travel. So it used to be flying. But as I get older, I feel like if I could teleport, that would be the best thing.
So you don't even have to spend time flying. You just...
it's more efficient.
If you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, that's really tough. Of course, I mean, I want to say Nepali food. But I mean, apart from that, I think Korean food. I love Korean food, I think.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
I love jambong, the noodle, like the spicy noodle Ooh. Soup. I love that. And I love... just like the simple bibimbaps and, there's a lot of variety, a lot of flavor. Also, I worked at a Korean restaurant for a while, so I know their food a lot. Yeah.
Heavily inspired.
Heavily inspired, yes, exactly.
And if you could go back into any Nepali historical moment, what would that be?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know, maybe I would go back to the 70s, specifically in like Kathmandu, and it just seems like a magical time, but I don't know, just judging by stories and footage and photos and just like where the country was at that time and the influence of the Western culture coming in and all the tourists coming in, it just seemed like a really interesting time. And back then I remember, I think like live shows was like a really big deal, because entertainment was so limited, and my dad used to tell us stories that there'd be a concert and it would be like a big event, it was like a concert, so everybody went. It just seems like a special time.
Yeah.
I would go back to the 70s.
And I've also heard stories about like how Tamil and like all those areas in the 70s, like it's different from the Tamil it is now.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. Before we delve into your musical journey, I just wanted to take some time to explore your childhood. You were born in Kathmandu and went to Brian Kanto School. How was your childhood like?
I think my childhood was really, really, really great. Just growing up and meeting all kinds of people and hearing, you know, stories of childhood. Like, I feel like I was like really lucky as far as the childhood I got. So my mother was a teacher in Burnham Country School. So ever since, I think I was like 2 or 3 years old, I grew up inside the school compound because the teachers had to live there. So we had a flat, and I think it was like an amazing place to grow up because before I went to school there, like I was growing up there, and then in the summer vacations, all the students would leave and it would just be me and my friends, the other staff kids. So we had like the whole school to ourselves, you know,
wow.
The basketball courts, the swimming pool. Like it was a very privileged childhood now I think about it. And, you know, you're outside from the city, you're like in a beautiful nature, a lot of trees.
Mm.
So I spent a lot of my childhood just, you know, going. We had like, there's a lot of like foresty areas inside the school because the compound was so big. So I would just go there, like spend like hours in like the woods and climbing trees and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was a very picturesque childhood.
I remember, I think you can only join Burang Kanto at certain stages.
Yeah,
I know. So class 4 month, I remember my mom really wanted me to get into Burang Kanto. So it's a long line. You have to like be outside in the school just to get in. And then like, I didn't even understand like why I had to go to that school. I didn't prepare anything. It was just like, okay, you're sitting a test tomorrow, like Saturday.
Oh, wow. yeah. It's pretty tough. The entrance exam, I remember.
Ani, have you always been into music since you were growing up?
Not like I am now. I think most of my childhood, like I always had a fondness for music. Like some of my first memories is music related. Like my dad used to play guitar. I remember that there was a guitar in the house. And then I liked listening to songs on the radio and cassettes my mom had and stuff like that, and a lot of it was like English songs, old Nepali songs, but I remember like getting like pleasure out of it at a very young age, which I think was like a big thing, like because nothing made me feel that way when I really liked a song, or like I would hear something and it would just be like an incredible feeling. That I remember the first time I heard like Eric Clapton on the radio. I was in the village in Lumjung where my grandfather and grandmother used to live. So he had this old radio there, and he would always tune it to the BBC station. So one time I heard this, I think it was Cocaine or something like that. You know, it just came on, and I like ran from wherever I was just to hear that because something about it. But then for years after that, I had like no interest in it, basically because I was more into sports and like basketball and, you know, like fashion and stuff like that. I was like a very like athletic kind of guy. And then I think when I was 16 or 17, I decided to play, like just learn, because I've been playing guitar on and off through those years, but never really committing to it. So I don't know what happened when I was 16, 17. Like, it just hit me like very powerfully. So since then, I've been obsessed with it completely. And everything just stopped after that. It's just only guitar and music. Yeah.
On your guitar, did your father help you with that? Or did you just learn it on your own?
Funnily, like my first chord was taught to me by my mom. It was she knows like maybe 3 or 4 chords, and she taught me that. That was probably when I was 13, 14. It was like really easy chords. She grew up in Singapore, and then back then you used to get these like big song books of like the hits of, so she was like a 70s child. So we had like all like, and then it had like thousands of songs in it. So we would like find like the songs with the easiest chords and the Beatles and stuff like that. But when I really shifted was, I just felt like a need to like learn guitar, but like very specific style of guitar. Like I was like, I listened to, it was actually a song called Don't Cry by Guns N' Roses. One day I was like, I'm just going to learn the guitar solo for this. Like, I don't know what happens. And I don't know why I thought that, but over the next month, I learned it like note for note. Yeah. And then I think that just unlocked everything for some reason. And then after that, it was just a complete obsession for me.
Wow. Yeah. So from that, I guess you were in Albatross for a while as well, right? When you were still in Nepal?
Yeah, Albatross, it was actually pretty brief. Less than a year I was with those guys. But I think it was the most defining moment for me when I look back on it, because like going to school in Bulandi Kanta, growing up there, we're very isolated. And I especially was very isolated and sheltered, because I had my own world up there. And even when I went down to like the city area, and because I would only hang out with my friends from school, so it was hard for me to connect to like anybody else.
Yeah.
But Sonny was like very nice. Like he saw me play once, and then he invited me to jam. If he hadn't invited me, like I don't know where I would be today. You know, so the Albatross guys are like really special to me in that sense. Like, and then we're all like excited to play music, and then it was like a magical like 6-7 months. We like almost practiced every single day, and then we played a lot of shows. We recorded an album, and it was all like really heavy metal music that we were really into back then.
I think back then as well, like all my guy friends, even in school, like that was the genre that everyone was into as well. Like it was very popular.
Yeah. Metal was very popular. Yeah.
And then around 2002, then you moved to New York for your education. Mm-hmm. How were there any differences, and how did you deal with the changes? Like Bulandi Kanta, like starting at Albatross for a few months, and then to a completely new city.
No, it was like one of the most traumatic events of my life, I think.
Oh my God.
It was such a big change. And it was like, you know, people say culture shock. And yeah, it was like a complete, absolute shock for me. I didn't know it at that time. But, you know, like in hindsight, like all the things that I went through coming from Nepal and also bringing like just a very sheltered existence to all of a sudden you're in this... I wasn't even like in the city, like I was upstate New York. So that's like still more like a, you know, not rural, but small town kind of place.
Yeah.
And everything was different than I'd imagined, you know, because the only thing we knew about America was the music and the movies we saw. And
with the cities.
Yeah, cities and just how people talk and whatever. And so when I first came, because I'm naturally more of an introvert, so it took me a long time to like, sort of feel comfortable in my college, I would say.
Yeah.
But it was a big learning experience. And even there, I was very lucky to find like the guys from Ayurveda. So that really helped me transition into life in the US.
Was that a conscious decision to join or form Ayurveda, or how did that come about?
Yeah, it was conscious. After like a certain point, at first it was just unconscious, because it was just like luck or, you know, fate or whatever you would say. Because when I first went there, I went to a college where there's not a lot of Nepali students. It's mostly white students there. And so in my class, there was this guy called Shikhar Bhajacharya. He was born in the US and his mom had gotten a job in Ithaca College, which was the college I went to.
Oh, yeah.
So he was my year. So, of course, we were like very excited to... So it was me and my Nepali friend, Tushar. Like, we were the only two Nepalis in the whole year.
Wow.
We were like, okay, there was another Nepali guy. We got to go meet him. So we talked to him and, you know, he's pretty American. So we were like, we didn't know what to make of it. But, you know, he's a very nice guy. And then he said, yeah, I play guitar. And, you know, we were like all into the same kind of music, which was shocking. Because for like a couple of months I was in the US, I couldn't find anyone who listened to like rock, or, you know, everybody listened to like hip-hop and pop. That was like the big thing. And still is the big thing. So I met him, and then he was like, we went to his house and we played guitar. He had a guitar, and he was the one who like sort of formed Ayurveda. And then he asked me like, "Hey, I'm starting a band." We weren't even called Ayurveda back then. We were just like, you know, a group of guys getting
just a band. Yeah.
And then it was something to look forward to every week. Like we practice every Saturday, and then you know the more we practice, the better we got. And then so my senior year, which was my last year of college, was when I made the conscious decision that like after I graduate, like this is what I want to do, like the band. So that was like a big decision to make at that point.
Because if I were in your shoes, I would think it's quite fearful to actually make that decision, right? Mm-hmm. You've gone to the States to study, and then suddenly like you're in a band and then you decide to do it, just go for it after you graduate. Did you have any doubts? How did your parents react? Like, was that an issue?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very scary thing to talk to my parents about. But I think that's one of the virtues of being young. Like, you don't really second guess certain things. Like, it just seems to, you know, you just have this, like, really fierce, like, need to do it. And I felt like at that point, I don't know if I had just stayed in Nepal, I don't know if I would have made that decision. But coming out to the US and living on my own for, like, the 4 years and for having to make my own decisions and, like, working all kinds of jobs and also, like, learning, you know, like, really reading, like, a lot of philosophy and then stuff like, you know, like, they really want you to, I mean, you know, you can be cynical about it, some people are, but the people really want you to follow your dreams and, you know, like, do what you're meant to do. Like, and at that time, I was very, like, idealistic in that sense, too. Like, I felt like this is what I need to do. And I really believed in the band, and everyone in the band was really talented. And we're all super committed to it, which, I mean, I think that was the main thing. Like, if none of the guys were, like, super into it, I don't think I would have had the courage to do it. But it was, like, five of us, and we're all, like, this is what we're going to do. We had, like, a mission, so... and then my parents, and of course, they were like disappointed, you know, like, because like you said, like you send your child with such high hopes. And I'm like, but I didn't say like, you know, I'm not, I just said like, I'm going to do it for like a year or two. Like, I just need that chance. And, you know, they were really understanding when it all comes down to it. So yeah, that's, it was a pretty tough time, I think. Yeah.
I actually went to school in Buffalo, so I understand the whole upstate New York. Like, you think you're in like
Buffalo,
New York City,
right,
but
yeah,
it's like
Buffalo.
Seven 7 hours away. And it's like a massive university as well. Like, it's so difficult to find your own community. And I had this one friend, she was born in the States as well. And if we had heard about any other Nepali people, we'd be like, oh my God, like we'd have our own session. Like, this so-and-so Nepali person, let's try meet them. Like, and we try go have momo parties.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Try to invite ourselves.
Yeah.
Now you're working in music full-time.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's so inspiring for a lot of like people trying to make their mark in music as well, because not a lot of people have that chance. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll be working like a full-time job or a few jobs and then working on music on the side. But I'm also imagining that turning your passion into work has its own challenges. Mm-hmm. How do you stay inspired?
That's a really good question. And ever since I started doing it full-time, it has definitely changed my relationship to music. And, you know, that's something I talk a lot about, especially with my wife, is like, I need to like find the joy in music, because sometimes I do lose it because I'm doing it every single day, and it becomes kind of mind-numbing at a point.
Yeah.
So like, I think at times like those, like I need to maybe just take a break, and which I usually do. Like, I probably won't do anything for a day, and the next day, I try to not just go back into work, or like I try to find some kind of song or music that I really like, just listening to, and I'm not like analyzing, because ever since I started doing music full time, like I feel like I can't just enjoy a song. I have to analyze everything, like, you know, what kind of kick drum are they using, like how are the vocals done, and what kind of scale, and what, you know, my mind just goes into all those things. And so I've been listening to a lot of like jazz not like really fast, like really like soothing jazz music, like John Coltrane and stuff like that. Because that is the furthest thing from what I do, and I actually don't understand that music. And then, so I was just trying to listen to like, or like world music, or even like hip hop, because I didn't really grow up listening to like hip hop or anything. And I tried to find stuff that, you know, takes me out of my like comfort zone, and just try to listen to music for what it really is. It's just music. It's not like work. It's not editing. It's not, you know, all that stuff.
To just enjoy it.
Just enjoy it. Yeah. And that really helps. And because then when I go back to work on it, it's like I feel refreshed somehow.
Mm.
But yeah, it's important to keep finding that joy.
Makes sense. How long were you in the music industry, or how long was it after Ayurveda that you decided that, okay, this is full time? Like, I'm going to go into this full time.
Actually, like, it was not my decision. It was actually, I was working at a restaurant when I moved to New York City. And then I didn't get fired, but the restaurant closed down. So I got a call. They're saying, you don't have to come in because we're going to close down. I said, when? They said, like, tomorrow. I was like, oh, no. So after that, it was just like, you know, I had a year or two of like really struggling, trying to make ends meet. But I think that really forced me to concentrate on recording and producing. And it's been like it's just been like the last 2 years where it's been very much more easier to make a living, especially a place like New York, which is so expensive just to exist. So yeah, I think it's been like a long, long process for me.
Anita, you have a new album coming up right now. Mm-hmm. And for most of the listeners, I mean, for almost all the listeners, we get to see the final product, like when you put out songs on YouTube, on SoundCloud, and we're all like happy. But there probably are a lot of sleepless nights and hard work behind the scenes.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
What's your process like when you decide on a single or like an album? How does it all work for you?
Usually it's because I'm writing stuff all the time, like composing, like ideas and things like that. And usually I'll have one idea where I'll feel like, oh, this can be a song. So it starts from there. And then it's just a matter of composing it and then refining it like over and over again. And then, so for me, it takes me a very long time to do a song, not even just for myself, but even for productions for other people that I'm doing. Like I'm usually not very fast because I feel like I need to be in that magical zone where things happen, and that just is not planned. So yeah, it's a lot of time. Time and effort.
Do you write songs first, or do you get the melody first? Like, because I'm a complete like novice in terms of music. Like I can't sing a song to even like save my life. I think I'm singing in tune, but I'm not. So like it's quite interesting for me to like talk to you and understand how it actually works, because anytime I hear a new song come out, I think, did this person write the song first and know how it's going to sound, or do they have the music, a melody first, and then they write the music, the song? How do they even write the song? Like, are they walking down the street and like, you know, the song just comes up in their mind? Like, or do you sit down and think, okay, I'm going to write a song today? Like, how does it work?
I think like, not just talking for myself, I think from like everything I've read about other people's process, like 80% of the time, it's the music that comes first. So usually starts with a chord change, like a chord pattern or a vocal melody or something you play on the piano, like a melody, or you make like a drum beat on your computer and then you start. So it usually starts with the music, and melody comes with the music or comes after it. And the lyrics usually follows it's like much later. In my process, sometimes I'll have the music done and then I'll maybe have like one or two words that just came, like when I was just messing around with vocal melodies. And those are, I think, are really special, because that's when your subconscious is working and you're reacting to the music in like a very non-judgmental way. And those phrases, I usually keep those phrases and it's built out from there. And the process of writing lyrics is like for me, it's a long process because it's a lot of revisions, trying to like hone in on what the song is trying to say, and it never gets easy. It's always every new song is extremely hard for me.
How long has it been taking you for this new album?
I think I started in 2017. So
really?
18, 19, 20. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting though.
Yeah, I mean, for not all the songs, like there's some songs I wrote on it that are just like a few months old, but the oldest songs are from 2017. And it's just, I've been refining it for a long time because I'm also learning a lot along the way, not just about songwriting, but also about the production aspect of it and the engineering aspect of it. And I really wanted to do everything myself. So I think that's why it's taken a long time. Because in the past, I would just do it and then have someone else do all the other side of it. But I think for me, this is like my, almost like my PhD thesis or something, because all the research that I'm doing it for my album has actually helped my work as a producer for other people's stuff, because whatever experiments that I do on my songs, like the fruits of that I can apply to other people's songs. And that's what's been happening.
Yeah. How did you get into producing music for other artists?
I think it was as simple as somebody asked me one day if they would do it. And it was the first song I ever produced was Sumnima Rai. And she and her uncle, they asked me just because right before that, my last album, Charna Sahar, I did it myself after I moved to New York. And that's a pretty like raw recording, but people liked it. And then, so they asked me and then I did it, and it was, you know, a really good experience for me. And, you know, I also made a little bit of money, and that was like a first for me. I've never gotten paid to make music in that way. Like for like doing shows is something else, but you don't make that much doing shows anyways. So, and then it was slowly built from there. And then my biggest break was when I did Bartika's EP. And that was the third artist I worked with. Because I worked with Sumnima, and then I worked with Tenzing Dolek, and then with Bartika. And after that, her music just really exploded. So after that, I think it opened a lot of doors for me, that album. Yeah.
Now, you've been in a band, and you've a solo songwriter as well, singer, and then now you're a music producer. How have these roles impacted your own musical journey?
Everything... it just builds on top of each other, I think. So, but I mean, my problem is I don't, I think my stuff is getting more and more eccentric because I spend a lot of time working on other people's songs, and a lot of them are mostly more like, you know, like a simple, like pop rock kind of structure. So I think it's impacted my music because when I work on my songs now, like, all the weird ideas that I wanted to use in some people's song that maybe they didn't like, it all goes into my song. So I think like it's over the years, like all my songs have like had less of a mass appeal. Like it's more like a cultish kind, like, you know, like very like indie.
Yeah, a very niche.
I become more and more niche as I work on more and more like mainstream projects. Like my music is becoming more and more niche, I think.
Like, you've been in music for over a decade, right?
Yeah.
What does music mean to you?
Right now it means, you know, it's like my whole world at this point. Like, because from the moment I wake up to I go to sleep, it's music nonstop. So it's a big constant in my life, and it has been a big constant for a long time. Even before I came to the US, like, it was something that was just always there. Ever since I started playing guitar, like, you know, like I said, like when I was 17 or 18. From then, it's like, I don't think I've ever gone a day without listening to music or interacting with it in some way. So for me right now, it's just my whole life, I would say. Yeah.
Do you prefer working with someone or working by yourself?
I prefer working with someone for sure. Like I like collaborating. But I do like having the filter at the end for me to do, like, to bring it to completion. I like doing that by myself. But as far as, like, the putting the pieces together, I like the process of collaborating a lot. It really helps sort of bring, like, a fresh dimension to whatever I'm doing.
Now, one of the main things that I'm trying to explore with this podcast is the idea behind success. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone has their own definition of success. And with your journey as well, what does success mean to you?
I guess, you know, in a practical sense, like, success means, like, being able to support yourself and not just getting by, but, you know, try to have, like, a comfortable living, making, like, a comfortable living with what you're doing. I think, you know, it's really important to be practical in that sense. As you get older, because, like, when you're younger, like, you can take a lot of knocks and stuff, but as you get older, you guys start thinking about maybe your responsibilities, not just to yourself, but to your parents and, like, to, like, your
own family as well.
So you do have to know those things, you know, and not just be completely irresponsible and just only follow your passion the whole time, you know. Because there's a time and place for that. And I mean, like, my late 30s. So I have to think about success in those terms as well, and not just, like, my own fulfillment of my artistic needs. But, you know, I'm getting to a happy medium where I can provide for the family and also, like, work in a field that I really want to do it in. But from an artistic standpoint, in as far as music is concerned, I think success is, for me, is if you can portray what you're hearing in your head and make it a reality. Like, that's for me is, like, the biggest thing. So a lot of times, the time I will enjoy a song the most is before I even release it, like, when it's done, after, like, a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. Whether it's my song or someone else's song, like, we work together, whatever. Like, it's just at the end when the final master is done. Like, for me, if it's successful, then I will feel like, you know, we actually, like, you know, whatever I was hearing in my head, it's there and I can listen to it and it's something real. And that to me is, like, and that is also, you know, doesn't happen with every song. Some songs, like, you kind of have to compromise, not compromise, but, you know, it's, maybe it gets to, like, 95% there, but some songs you get that 100% feeling, and I've had that a couple of times, and that's like one of the best feelings ever. And sometimes you don't want to even release it, because once you release the song, like, it becomes something else. Like, it really changes.
It's no longer yours.
Yeah, it's no longer yours, and, you know, like, everybody has their opinions. I mean, they love it, they hate it. Like, I think the way to, like, fix that for me is, like, when I start playing them live. You know, then you start to have a completely new relationship to that song. But before that, like, that time period between you releasing and you playing live, for me, it's like, it's not a very comfortable time for me, because I don't know how I feel about that song anymore. You know, so it's it's something I struggle with.
Yeah. Do you like performing your songs live as well?
Yeah, I love performing. It's one of the best things. It's one of the things that really caught me when I was younger. Like, my first show as a guitarist, after I'd been, like, you know, practicing for, like, months and months and months, the first show I did, like, this adrenaline rush that I got, you know, I didn't know, like, who was listening or, like, whatever, but just that I was on stage and I was playing, I was, like, scared and, like, sweating, but, you know, just managing to do the stuff. Maybe I messed up one part. But then as a whole, like, you know, it's such a magical thing performing live, and it's tough too, like, because not every gig is great, and but you can find something good in every horrible show, even.
So, in talking about that, you've toured many countries, right? What's been your most memorable show so far?
Oh, wow!
If you had to pick one out of everything. Nepal, UK, Australia, New York, like, anywhere. Like, if you had to pick one show,
that's really tough.
What would that be?
I played so many amazing shows. It's really, really hard to say. Like, the Nepal shows, I really loved, but unfortunately, every time I play a Nepal show, I'm always really sick. This happened like every time we've gone back, and it always happens. I'm really excited for it, and we practice, and I get really sick like the night before, and so it's hard to say like those are. As far as like audience turnout and all the Nepal shows are obviously like the best shows, but as far as like me feeling like 100%, it's not. But I guess like my favorite show I've done, I guess it's like June Fest I did in UK maybe 2 or 3 years ago. That's the one I'm like my favorite. Not just the show, but you know, the whole festival and all the acts who were there and the days leading up to it, and you know, like being UK and having the guys from Hami, like being in my band, like they backed me up. Yugal and Pujan and Jerusha was there. She was playing keyboards for my set. And it was just like a really amazing time just being with all these great musicians and being in the UK. And you know, the way they treated all the artists and the hospitality. Like, and you know, Sabin Dai was there and Bipul Chetri was there and Nitesh was, it was such a magical time.
Wow,
that was like one of my best as a whole like experience. So June Fest, you guys are awesome.
I guess just to wrap things up as well then, if there is any advice you could give to anyone that's far away from home and are quite struggling to find their paths, what would your advice be?
I think nowadays it's a lot easier to reach out, and I think that's really important. Like when you're feeling really bad, like you do have to make that, you have to try to find within yourself to make that effort to reach out to, you know, family member or friend, because it's, you know, as many ways that you can feel isolated now, there's like equally that many ways that you can be connected to whoever, like, but, you know, I think it's important to make that step. But as far as like struggling with your dreams or like what you want to do in life and stuff like that, I think it's never too late to just try to do what you want to do and make mistakes, because you can always learn from mistakes, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not like gambling your life away, something horrible, or you know, yeah, it's like
gambling is my passion, let me just go for it.
Yeah, as long you know, you gotta have a common sense about it, but it's better to make mistakes than to regret later on, I feel like. So everyone's having doubts about, you know, especially for you know, for us, it's extra hard because, you know, like you said, we came from Nepal. We're with like a really like, you know, it's a very narrow like bandwidth of like what you're supposed to do and why you're here. And but what if you want to do something else? And, you know, that's a struggle I think a lot of people face. And a lot of people ask me about that. And I think it's, you know, if the conditions seem right, then you should just do it. But also, like nowadays, I feel like with YouTube and everything, it's not necessary to like just, you know, like it's not like one or the other so much anymore.
Yeah.
And the younger artists, you know, they have like full-time day jobs or whatever, but they're still doing music.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you want to become like a, you know, like a music producer working full-time, if you just want to be an artist, nowadays it's very possible to have it all. Like, you know, you can.
Yeah. Many resources available. Yeah, it's cool.
And also the way that people consume music has changed, where you don't have to put out an album every year, or you know, you can put out one song every couple of months, and that is, as not from my view, but from general mainstream view, it's as important. Like it makes an equal amount of impact. So yeah, I think people have it like a lot easier now. So I would say, just remember that if you're feeling, because things were very different when I was, you know, back in 2002. Yeah.
All right. So thank you so much for your time again. That it was lovely chatting with you and just getting to hear your story. I really appreciate you taking out time for us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's really good talking to you.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. The screenshots you've been sharing with key insights on the episodes and tagging us at hamro.yathra on Instagram truly make my day. So thank you and keep them coming.